This is the last day of this October 2014 seven-day session. And we'll take up another koan today. This is from the Shoyoroku, and sometimes that title is translated as the Book of Serenity, sometimes as the Book of Equanimity. They're a little different, those two words. Equanimity is usually the translation of the fourth of the four divine abodes. This is not so much a Zen thing, but it's very solidly a Buddhist thing, Buddhist doctrine. They're in India and Southeast Asia, they're called the four Brahma Viharas, divine abodes. And these are four basic qualities that one develops through practice. The first is metta, or loving kindness. The second is karuna, compassion. The third is mudita, which means sympathetic joy. That is, joining in the joy of others' success or joy. And the fourth is equanimity, upekka. So loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. Equanimity means an evenness, where one is not thrown by the vicissitudes of life, but maintains this non-attachment to change, basically, evenness. So this is number 41 from the, say, Serenity, Book of Serenity. And it's called Lupu's Last Moments. L-U-O-P-U. Lupu's Last Moments. When Lupu was about to die, he said to the assembly, "I have one matter to ask you about. If you say yes to this, you're putting another head upon your own. If you say no, you are looking for life by cutting off your head." That's the challenge. The head monk said, "The green mountain is always lifting its feet. You don't use a lantern in the daylight." Lupu said, "What time is this to say such a thing?" A senior monk named Yang Kong stepped forward and said, "Leaving aside these two paths, please, Master, don't ask." He's offering his response. Lupu said, "Not yet, but say some more." Yang Kong said, "I cannot say it fully." Lupu said, "I don't care whether or not you can say it fully." Yang Kong said, "I have no attendant to respond properly to you." That evening, Lupu summoned Yang Kong and said, "Your response today made good sense. You should realize what my late teacher said." And he gave this verse, "Before the eyes there are no dharmas. Mind is before the eyes. That is not the dharma before the eyes. It cannot be reached by eyes and ears." And then Lupu continues, "Which phrases are guest? Which phrases are host? If you can sort them out, I will transmit the robe and bowl to you." Yang Kong said, "I don't understand." Lupu said, "You must understand it." "I really don't." Lupu shouted and said, "How miserable." A monk nearby said, "What is the teacher's meaning?" Lupu said, "The boat of compassion is not rowed over smooth waters. It's useless to release the wooden goose down steep rapids." if that and that in particular is going to sound completely opaque to most people, because it's there are these cultural allusions sprinkled in through the koans that we wouldn't know because they're Chinese, but we'll get to it. But first, a bit about this Lupu. His dates are 834 to 898. I'm reading from Zen's Chinese Heritage, edited and translated by Andy Ferguson. Lupu's dates are 834 to 898, which places him squarely in the Tang Dynasty. He was a disciple of a master by the name of Jiashan. There's not too much here that would mean anything to most of us. He was ordained at the age of 20. He was well versed in the Buddhist sutras and doctrine. Here's one. He practiced under Lin Qi and served as Lin Qi's attendant. This is Rinzai, one of the most famous names in Zen. And then later, it was later than he went to this Jiashan, who made him his Dharma heir. And the only other thing it says is Lupu was known as a skilled expounder of Dharma, and students came from throughout China to study under him. So this, I have one long entry here and a couple of shorter ones. Lin Qi once praised Lupu before the congregation, saying, "Here is an arrow of the Lin Qi school. Who dares to withstand its point?" Lin Qi bestowed Dharma transmission upon Lupu, giving him the Dharma name Yizu, already complete. So Lin Qi gave him Dharma transmission, but the other one, Jiashan, made him his Dharma heir. When Lupu was acting as Lin Qi's attendant, a sutra master came to meet with Lin Qi. Lin Qi asked the sutra master, "If there is a person who understands the three vehicles and 12 divisions of sutra, and there is another person who does not understand the three vehicles and the 12 divisions of sutra, then do you say these two people are the same or different?" Three vehicles are the Mahayana, the Theravada, and the Vajrayana, these big streams of Buddhist practice and teaching. The 12 divisions of the sutra, I don't know what that is. So, two people, one who understands all that, and the other one who doesn't. Are they the same or different? The sutra master said, "What they understand is the same. What they don't understand is different." Lupu interjected. Now he's inserting himself between Lin Qi and the sutra master. "How can you say such a thing, talking about same and different?" And then Lin Qi wheels on Lupu and says, "What are you doing?" Lupu then shouted. Lin Qi sent away the sutra master, then asked Lupu, "Do you think it's appropriate to shout at me?" Lupu said, "Yes." We could say, he who lives by the sword dies by the sword. Lin Qi was known for his stick. Doshan for his shout and Lin Qi for his stick. much of the reputation, the violent reputation of the Zen masters comes from these two. Linji then hit him. Sometime later, when Lupu prepared to leave Linji, Linji asked him, "Where are you going?" Lupu said, "I'm going south." Now, let me just pause for a second. I missed something here. Just about the hitting. Don't assume that when Linji or any other master hits, especially in this case, a prized disciple, Linji hitting Lupu, that it means it's punitive, that he's angry with him. It could mean that, or it could mean other things. Being struck in Asia, at least in China, being struck by the master with a stick does not mean what it means here. It often is taken with gratitude and with real appreciation. It's taken as a tribute. I'm not speaking about the Kyosaku in the Zendo, but just right now I'm just talking about these Mondo Dharma duels between master and disciple, or two masters. So when Lupu was about to leave Linji, Linji asked him, "Where are you going?" "I'm going south." Linji took his staff and drew a circle in the air. Then he said, "Pass through this and then go." Lupu shouted. Linji hit him. Lupu bowed and then left. The next day, Linji entered the hall and said, "Beneath the gate of Linji is a red-tailed carp. Shaking its head and wagging its tail, it goes south. I don't know in whose pickled vegetable pot it will drown." To make these dialogues even more obscure, often saying something that to our ears sounds critical, negative, can be praise. Lupu traveled for a year and then came to Mount Jia, where he built a hut and stayed. He remained there a year without visiting Zen master Jiashan's monastery on the same mountain. So here they are, this young realized monk, and he moves to the same mountain as this Zen master Jiashan, and stays there a year without visiting him. Finally, Jiashan wrote a letter and instructed a monk to take it to Lupu. Lupu received the letter, then went back and sat down without reading it. He then extended his hand to the monk as if to say, "Do you have anything else?" When the monk didn't answer, Lupu hit him. When in doubt, hit, I guess. And said, "Go back and tell your teacher about this." The monk went back, sure enough, and recounted to Jiashan what had happened. Jiashan said, "If he opens the letter, then he'll come here within 3 days. If he doesn't open it, then no one can save him." 3 days later, Lupu came. Upon coming before Jiashan, he didn't bow, but just folded his hands and stood there. This would be quite a statement in itself, no bow. Just folded his hands and stood there. Jiashan said, "A chicken is roosting in a phoenix's nest. They aren't the same species. Go away." Lupu said, "I've come from afar to seek your teaching. I ask you to receive me." Jiashan said, "Before me there is no you. I am not over here." Lupu shouted. Jiashan said, "Stop, stop. Don't be so crude. The moon, though eclipsed by clouds, remains the same. But every valley and peak is different." This is just pure Dharma metaphor. The moon, though eclipsed by clouds, remains, even though it's obscured by the clouds, it always is shining there. But every valley and peak is different. It's not that you can't cut off the tongues of everyone on earth, but can you make a tongueless man talk? You know, more Chinese idioms about the quality of responding and teaching. Lu Pu was lost in thought. Jiashan hit him. Lu Pu then made a bow and became the student of Jiashan. So here we start off with Lin Qi heaping praise on this Lu Pu, even made him his attendant. And then by the end, Lu Pu had found someone who he felt was really his teacher, and he accepted him as his teacher. And this is another exchange between the new disciple and teacher. Lu Pu asked Jiashan, "How does one realize the place that isn't reached by Buddhas and demons?" So just a way of saying, what is beyond everything? How does one realize that? Jiashan said, "A candle illuminates 1,000 miles of forms. Inside my room, I'm confused." And then Lu Pu also asked, "How is it when the morning sun has risen and the night moon is not visible anymore?" Jiashan said, "In the dragon's mouth is a pearl, but the swarming fish don't notice it." This is the Buddhist myth of the pearl of wisdom and the dragon's mouth. A dragon is a symbol of enlightenment, but the swarming fish don't notice it. Lu Pu went to Shenyang, where he encountered an old friend. They talked about hiding out during the persecution of Buddhism. This was the persecution of 845, when the Roksus first came into being, where the monks were forced out of their monastic robes and had to wear lay clothes, but they fashioned these strips of cloth under their and wore it under their clothes to remind them that they were still at heart followers of the way. That's how the Roksu supposedly got started during that persecution. So these two, Lu Pu and his old friend, talked about hiding out during the persecution, and his friend asked, "Where did you flee during the persecution?" Lu Pu said, "I just remained in the middle of the market." His friend said, "Why didn't you go where there aren't any people?" Half of these things can be taken two different ways. Lu Pu said, "What problems are there where there are no people?" What problems are there where there are no people? A Zen master was once asked, if you had your choice of where to go for your next life after death, where would you choose to go? And the master said, "To hell, because that's where I'd be needed the most." What problems are there where there are no people? His friend asked, "How did you escape by being in the market?" Lu Pu said, "Although I remained in the middle of the market, no one knew me." There's also these words of Zen, nothing distinguishes the enlightened person. It's considered the kind of the highest stage of enlightenment, where there's such a transparency about the person that she or he just appears utterly ordinary. Although I remained in the middle of the market, no one knew me. His friend was perplexed. He also asked, "The teaching of all Buddhas, the transmission of all the ancestors, when these are not concealed, then what happened?" When these were not concealed, then what happened? Lupu said, "Before an old rustic's door, there is no talk of the affairs of the royal court." His friend asked, "What do you mean by this?" Lupu said, "If one doesn't encounter others, after all, nothing is revealed." His friend said, "When someone who's not from the royal court arrives and you meet him, can you speak with him or not?" Lupu said, "The immeasurable function. It's seen in arduous circumstances." And that's the end of it. So now back to the case, the koan for today. So now this is when Lupu was about to die. This is what we just read, the dialogues we just read, was when he was still young and full of piss and vinegar, and his enlightenment was still not matured, not that refined. But with this koan now, this is many years had passed, and we have a seasoned man here. He was about to die. He said to the assembly, "I have one matter to ask you about. If you say yes to this, you're putting another head upon your own. If you say no, you are looking for life by cutting off your head." So this is just the opening. He's throwing down the gauntlet, putting the monks in a dilemma. This is like a koan. You can't say yes, you can't say no. You can't affirm, you can't negate. You can't say this, you can't say that. That's one of the most succinct of the Buddha's statements. He said, not this, not that. Where does that leave you? Well, the head monk first. I think often the head monks felt obliged to throw in their hat into the ring, start in the beginning. And this head monk comes out with this quite interesting saying, "The green mountain is always lifting its feet. You don't use a lantern in the daylight." Sounds pretty zenny, doesn't it? Pretty, pretty profound. Oh, yes. But then Lupu said, "What time is this to say such a thing? Come on, head monk." The statement by itself may convey some real dharma, but apparently, judging by Lupu's response, it's not. The timing is off. It's not apt. So Lupu says, what time is this to say such a thing? And then another senior monk named Yang Kong stepped forward and said, leaving aside these two paths, please, Master, don't ask. Now this is another, this guy is also not a beginner. And Lupu said, not yet, but say some more. Give me some more. What else have you got? So he wants to work with this guy. Yang Kong said, I cannot say it fully. So right away, he kind of backs off. Lupu said, I don't care whether or not you can say it fully. Come on. Yang Kong said, I have no attendant to respond properly to you. I read in a commentary on this koan that this is a, was a Chinese idiomatic expression, meaning it can't be expressed in words. That's a kind of a safe stance. The teacher's asking for some verbal response, and you say it can't be expressed in words. That's the challenge, is to express sometimes in words what cannot be encompassed in words. Bobby McFerrin, the jazz musician, was once asked, you're known for your improvised solo concerts. Can you explain how that works, the process of musical improvisation? And in his response, I thought immediately of Doksan, and what the student is called on to do in Doksan. And McFerrin makes it sound quite doable. He says, the process is very easy to explain. Improvisation is basically motion. You simply sing one note and then another note. Or you play one note and then you follow it with another. Even if it's rambling and you don't know what you're doing, you're still improvising because you don't really need a lot of musical knowledge. I'm not even sure if you need any at all, because anybody can physically move their fingers on the keyboard or the violin or the flute or whatever they're playing. Singers can open up their mouths and just sing one note after another. That's the motion of improvisation. And the true virtuosos who really do it well are the ones who sort of face the fear of the unknown and are constantly making themselves move into it without really seeing what the next step is going to be. That's the hardest part of improv, getting over the fear of doing it. This is one of the central values of going to Doksan, is going into a situation of not knowing. We talked yesterday in Taisho about not knowing, how really every Zen practice in its own way is kind of delivering us into the realm of the unknown, delivering us into darkness, because that's where the money is, in the darkness. And to go into any situation without a script is challenging. But challenges bring out things in us that we wouldn't have otherwise discovered. All right, so Lupu is valiantly working with this, Lupu is valiantly working with this disciple who's not coming up with the goods, but enough so that the next thing, that evening, Lupu summoned Yang Kong and said, "Your response today made good sense." So he's still wanting to work with him. And then he says, "You should realize what my late teacher said." And then he quotes his teacher in this four-line verse. "Before the eyes there are no dharmas. Mind is before the eyes. That is not the dharma before the eyes. It cannot be reached by eyes and ears." This is part of one of the several points the student has to present in Doksan. Then Lupu continues, which of these phrases are the guest, which phrases are the host? This is just an old way of distinguishing between that which is the unchanging aspect of mind and that which is the changing aspect. You could say the blue sky and the clouds. This blue sky is host, clouds are guest. Makyo are guests. Thoughts are guests. Pain is a guest. What's the host in all of these cases? Which phrases are the guest? Which phrases are the host? If you can sort them out, I will transmit the robe and bowl to you. When I first encountered this koan, I somehow got the impression that Lupu had no Dharma successor here as he was about to die, and that he was desperate to not die without a successor. But then I learned that he already had 11 successors. So he's not just grasping at straws here with Yang Kong. He sees someone with real potential. So he presents this challenge, and Yang Kong says, "I don't understand." Lupu, from his sick bed perhaps, says, "You must understand it." Yang Kong, "I really don't." What these koans only hint at, or sometimes not even, is the feeling, the emotion behind these lines. The koans just sketch out. It's like a coloring book, a new coloring book that has no colors, just the outline. And the student has to bring forth, has to intuit what is behind the words, behind these lines. And that's part of the value of koan work, is you have to learn to not be taken in by the words, or not see things just at face value, but to see what's behind what people are saying. It's an enormously valuable skill to develop in daily life. We can be sure that he's in pain. "You must understand it." "I really don't." Lupu shouted and said, "How miserable! A monk nearby said, "What is the teacher's meaning?" And Lupu said, "The boat of compassion is not rowed over smooth waters, and it's useless to release the wooden goose down steep rapids." This is another point in the koan, but we do offer a footnote here. To the second one, it was a custom at the time that a boat heading downstream, in order to plot a safe course through a gorge, would release a, quote, wooden goose into the water so as to determine the turbulence and possibly avert a collision with another boat. The boat of compassion is not rowed over smooth waters. Any teacher knows this. Teacher isn't a complete teacher if he or she is too invested in the student's work. That is, there's some attachment there if the teacher is affected too much by what a student has accomplished or not accomplished. Same time, no teacher is indifferent to when it is that a student finally understand. Teacher can always sigh and take consolation in the words of Aeneas Nin, who said, "And then the time came when the risk to remain tight in a bud was more painful than the risk to blossom." In the end, it's always a matter of the pain. When the pain reaches a point and you can't bear it anymore, you can't bear not knowing, you find a way. A teacher is someone who has to have seen the other side of success and failure. That is, who has seen that there's this realm that is beyond success and failure. There is an intelligence to the universe. There is an order There aren't mistakes. There isn't injustice in this realm. I have a kind of a poem here, a prose poem, and I've had it for years, but I never found out who wrote this. But it's a beautiful, profound passage. So until I can get out of Sesshin and Google it, we just have to. I'm told that that is one way of doing it. But this is how it goes. Could you but see the tides of that breath, you would cease to see all else. And if you could hear the whispering of the dream, you would hear no other sound. But you do not see, nor do you hear, and it is well. The veil that clouds your eyes shall be lifted by the hands that wove it, and the clay that fills your ears shall be pierced by those fingers that knead it. And you shall see, and you shall hear. Yet you shall not deplore having known blindness, nor regret having been deaf. For in that day you shall know the hidden purposes in all things, and you shall bless darkness as you would bless light. Our time is up. We'll stop and recite the four vows.